Okay, guys, Weekside Podcast Time is here alongside Jenny Vrentis. I'm Connor Orr, and we have a always one of my favorite things in the show. We got a big Jenny Vrentis piece to come talk about later on in the news, but let's start with the Patrick Mahomes mega deal that is kind of a mega deal, but also kind of not a mega deal. It's a 10-year deal with that eclipses $500 million, and there's some really fun new agent legalese terms that are being thrown around to sort of fluff up the importance of all this. But Jenny, I like big, ridiculous mega contracts because they're just so goofy, and the player never ends up completing the contract, especially in this time and where we're all training ourselves in our minds to take things hour by hour or day by day. The Kansas City Chiefs are building a decade into the future. We don't know what the NFL is going to look like. We don't know if there's going to be a season this year, but I guess the one thing we do know is that in 2030, right? 2030, yeah. Patrick Mahomes will still be a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Theoretically, maybe, but possibly not.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know that. We don't really know anything. But it was kind of unexpected. I mean, I think we did say, as a Vrentis consensus, that, or maybe it was an Oracle. Which one was it, Connor?
Well, if it was right, it was yours, and if it was wrong, it was mine.
No, we said to, like, chill out. The deal's going to get done. This is not going to be a big deal. He wants to be in Kansas City. The Chiefs obviously want him in Kansas City. He wanted long-term stability. He got, you know, he's in the best possible place with Andy Reid, although Andy Reid, you know, that's a long commitment to Andy Reid to continue coaching as well, but seems like he's up for it. So, but yeah, we knew this was going to get done. I guess it was just kind of like, it felt like inevitable, but then to see it come across was still a little shocking, right?
Yeah, I think it was shocking, and, you know, I kind of equated it to, I think, you know, the last quarterback to sign a 10-year contract was who? Dante Culpepper, and in 2003, by 2013, he was out of the league, he was in arena football for a little while, so, and I'm not saying that's going to happen with Patrick Mahomes, but I'm just saying, you know, let's approach the deal less like it is guaranteeing the future and more like, hey, it's a fun thing that happened right now. Does it blow up and throttle the quarterback market? Absolutely, no doubt. But does it do anything else? Really, no. And what bothers me is that a lot of people are complaining that Patrick Mahomes didn't hold out and fight for a percentage of the salary cap, which I guess would have been the right thing to do, the sort of the smart inside football thing to do, but who cares? You know, that's not the deal that he wanted. Him and his agent wanted to, you know, make a splash, sign the big, quote-unquote, biggest contract in professional sports history. They did it, and that's it. I mean, I don't know. I think if he wanted the contract to be tied to the salary cap, they probably could have figured something out like that, but it seems like that wasn't the battle plan.
Yeah, it does seem like criticism of players is there no matter what you do, right? So if you hold out, then, oh, all of a sudden the player is greedy. And if they accept a reasonable deal that doesn't push the terms to the maximum of what he might have been able to get had he used all of his leverage, then, man, he should have pushed for more. So I think if you're Patrick Mahomes, you're pretty happy with the deal. You truly don't want to play anywhere else than with Andy Reid, and who could blame him? It's a perfect marriage there, and gets it behind him for whenever there's a football season.
I have no position or foundation to criticize anybody's negotiating skills. I remember my negotiation at Sports Illustrated, which was, hey, Connor, we'd like you to work for Sports Illustrated. I said, great. When do I start? At the end of October. Fantastic. Hang up. Wait, how much money am I making? Doesn't matter. Like, if you're excited to be somewhere and you want to be somewhere, then good for you. I will say I was trying out this line on everybody, but no one was biting, and I'm hoping that you're going to like it. Which
oh,
is that,
boy.
Yeah, I know. It's dicey. Yeah, I am too. I'm really nervous. Do you ever watch Boy Meets World?
I have a couple times. Yeah, I mean, I know my pop culture knowledge is limited, but I have seen the show, Topanga.
Corey and Topanga.
Yeah.
So Corey proposes to Topanga. They're high school sweethearts. He proposes at high school graduation. They're throwing the caps up in the air. He flips around, gives her the ring, and says, I want you to marry me. And Topanga was off to Yale. Corey was off to some directional school in whatever state that they lived in, Pennsylvania. I think they lived near Philadelphia. She ends up blocking it in. And I feel like a 10-year deal is basically the equivalent of that, right? It's proposing to your high school sweetheart at graduation. It is tattooing your significant other's name somewhere on your body. It's like such a ridiculous and aggressive show of love and affection that ultimately has no bearing on whether or not it's going to actually work out, right? Like, you never know. Corey and Topanga seem to be okay. They got a second show, Girl Meets World, where they had a kid and everything, you know,
really?
And everything was, yeah, Girl Meets World was shorter lived, but they brought the whole cast back, and then it was about their daughter getting old and growing up and doing that. I don't think it's still on, but I was very excited about it initially when it came on to Disney Channel. But it's neither here nor there. But I think that, you know, it's just, it's silly. Like, and that's not to belittle anything, but it's just like, it's one of these like perfectly American things where it's just like, we're going to max out this contract and make it so ridiculous and big and gargantuan. But really, when you poke inside, it's just a normal quarterback contract that's for a little bit more than the other quarterback contracts.
Right, and the length of it and the slight increase in the length of it make it seem massive, which it is massive. I mean, that's not to say that it's not, but always these deals seem less massive in hindsight. My biggest question with your analogy is that you, as a fellow Pennsylvania native, seem to cite directional schools in Pennsylvania, and I don't know of any directional schools in Pennsylvania.
Well, I believe that they went to a non-existent university.
So
it was like Western Pennsylvania University or one of those things. I guess the Pennsylvania equivalent of the directional schools would have been the state school system, right? So you had Stony Brook and Kutztown and Bloomsburg and
Millersville.
Yeah.
East Stroudsburg, I think, is maybe one.
East Stroudsburg. I can go through and I can actually name all those nicknames too. East Stroudsburg is the Warriors. Millersville are the Marauders. Bloomsburg are the Huskies. So yeah, no, we know our. We know our directional schools in Pennsylvania, most of which waitlisted or denied my applications at college, by the way. So don't think that Orr forgets any of that. I think this is one of those deals where it's good, I guess. It keeps the Chiefs core together, but it's one of those things that we were like, okay, you know, this was going to happen anyway, no matter what.
Yeah. But it's good to talk about, and we recorded our podcast on Monday before the big news, Connor, so this is really the first time that we've had to discuss it. So
yeah, absolutely. One thing I will say that I do enjoy about the rest of this is we'd fallen in a little bit of a rhythmic tango between agents and teams, and like every deal was like, okay, it's $500,000 more than the other deal, and cha-cha, and you know, we'll do a little bit of injury guarantee here and there, and everything was getting a little boring. This makes it a little sexier, though. And the next time Dak Prescott comes to the negotiating table, or Aaron Rodgers, or any of these, you know, generationally talented players, they could say, look at this, I want one of these, I want the big 10-year guy.
Right. But the question is, what will really be the impact for those other guys? Because no one is Pat Mahomes right now.
True.
Except for Pat Mahomes, obviously.
Exactly. And we'll get to that in a little bit.
Really insightful for our listeners here, Connor. I'm just really dropping a lot of knowledge here. I can see why people come back week after week.
I think I come for the Vrentis. So, anyway, let's start, though, because we're going to get to the impact on the quarterback market in a little bit. But I want to start with our SI daily cover story, which we're recording this on Wednesday. It's already online. It's going to lead the site on Thursday. And Jenny, you and our fellow senior writer, Michael Rosenberg, dug into this brilliant story on Daniel Snyder and his charity, which was meant to support Native Americans and was initially brought up with great fanfare. But as you guys dug into the details and looked at the records, it seems that is not so much the case anymore.
Yeah, it's really an interesting situation. I remember when they launched the foundation in 2014 because I was working on a story about the team name, and we reached out to several Native American communities and visited a couple communities as well. And we're doing a story focused on how Native Americans felt about the team name. And that story was impactful in my mind, or how I thought about things, because it was so easy to find people who are deeply offended and hurt by the name, and hearing their personal accounts has really stuck with me. So when the name change issue came up again now, it, as I mentioned on another pod, you know, had kind of receded from the public spotlight a little bit once the trademark challenge, a group of Native Americans challenged the trademark on the ground that it was disparaging, and they essentially lost on a constitutional decision. The Supreme Court made a ruling in another case that essentially made their case no longer viable. But, you know, they had challenged the trademark, and that had really pushed this issue to the forefront in 2014. And then once that was dismissed in 2016 was the Supreme Court ruling that effectively ended the trademark challenge. So the foundation was launched in 2014 at the height of the trademark suit. And I remember the story that I was writing about the team name, they announced the foundation like the night before our story was supposed to run. So it was like, it's always kind of been in my head. And I just, when all of this came up again, I said, let me take a look at the foundation. So I pulled up the 990s and I said, wow, the funding has really dropped. They gave about $3.7 million the first year and then 1 point something million in the second year, then dropped to 600, 300. Meanwhile, they had 800,000 in operating expenses, including salaries. And so we realized there was definitely a story there. And then over the last 2 weeks, it was kind of talking to Native American leaders, activists, asking the team and checking in and seeing where things stand. So the team says the foundation is still active, that Gary Edwards, who's a retired Secret Service agent, is still running it. But the accounts from tribes that had relationships with the foundation showed otherwise. Several tribal leaders said they were ghosted by the team, or when they reached out this spring for additional funding amid the COVID-19 pandemic, two tribes said they asked about testing kits and were told that the foundation couldn't help. So really the operations have steeply declined, and the foundation is currently not in good standing with the state of Virginia. Now that's comes out of a result of not paying an annual fee and not filing an annual report, but that just shows that they're kind of not doing the basic upkeep despite apparently having several people on the payroll to run the foundation. So it raises a lot of questions, and it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't add up, right? Stan Snyder has a lot of money. Their main charitable foundation continues to give. All of a sudden, his contributions to the foundation and thus the grants and money that the foundation has given out have steeply declined. And that coincided with the public pressure of the team name kind of receding a bit until, of course, the last few weeks.
It's incredible. And it really shows, like, you know, it's what you do in the dark, right? It's what you do when nobody's watching and there is no public pressure that sort of reveals the character. And not that that's to say that we haven't known that about Daniel Snyder, and not that it wasn't, you know, comical, the fact that they only decided to change the name after, you know, Nike and FedEx and everybody put pressure on them. But I mean, this is the real and legitimate person, right? This is the guy who is just doing things because other people are making him do it. And he felt pressure to start the foundation initially. And then once everybody stopped paying attention, he just let it get all dusty and cobwebby. And that's just crazy to me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty wild if you kind of look at the timeline and how things worked out. And also if you kind of track where some of the money went, tribes that spoke up in support of the team name. There were a couple tribes that signed on to I've been saying amicus brief, but then we were on the phone with one of the lawyers for the story, and he said amicus brief. And I'm
what?
Like, wait, I don't know. Am I saying it wrong? I actually have no idea how to say this. So if there's any lawyers listening that can help us out.
That's another big key demographic of our pod. Our pod is English soccer fans and attorneys. So
okay, they know how dumb I'm sounding potentially. Anyways, several of the tribes that were supportive in filing this brief in the trademark case, they were supportive of Washington keeping the trademark, ended up getting funding. And Connor, three high schools that use Redskins as their mascot also received funding. And there aren't that many high schools across the nation anymore. There was a Capital News story in 2017 that said that they found 49 schools. So it's not like this is necessarily very common. And then two of the schools that use the R word as the mascot have low percentages of Native American students, 13%, 7%. So why else are they giving to this community then? You know, it, you could make that connection, as many activists have asked. So
wow,
a lot of questions raised here. And look, they're starting a new chapter. They're moving forward. But that doesn't erase the fact that they didn't follow through on what has been their big public shield for keeping the name.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I don't know what is next, and do you think that, you know, an insight and, you know, more people finding out about this now, I mean, does that kind of come into intersection at all with the efforts to change the name? Does it I would guess it struggles, forces him to struggle a little bit more to make this seem legitimate and out of the goodness of his own heart, at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see what the next step is. So the foundation's website has been taken down, and a team spokesman said it was as they were doing this review, they took down the website because they didn't want anything to be scrutinized, which is sort of strange because they put out a press release using the logo, using the word. Anything with Redskins or the logo on it is offensive. So why just take down the foundation's website when all of it needs to go and be reset, obviously? I also thought it was interesting. So USA Today had a story earlier. Theirs published about 1 p.m. and ours published about 5:30. They had an additional 990 in their story that showed that there was $0 in grants one tax period later. I was not able to find that 990. But it's interesting, the same day that both of these stories come out, a team source told Adam Schefter that they do not plan to use any Native American imagery in the rebranding. So, you know, I think what's frustrating here is, yes, Native American communities do have a lot of needs, and there are reasons for that. They've been marginalized throughout history by leaders in our country. So the fact that there are a lot of needs on the reservation shouldn't be held against them because of institutionalized racism. But it has been wielded against them in the context of the fight to preserve the name up until this point, right? Okay, well, they have a lot of needs and here we are helping them. And, you know, a lot of community leaders I talked to said many of the gifts that Washington gave out were playground equipment, you know, things for children, or iPads for seniors, things for the elders. Those are two groups that they're not going to turn down resources for, right? I mean, you value your children, you value your elders. And so you put communities in a tough position where here's a way to fill a need, but do we want to be associated with a team that uses a dictionary-defined word as a slur? And do we want to potentially be propped up as thus endorsing the name or standing with the team? And so it just was exploitative. Is you're telling disadvantaged communities, here, we'll give you these funds, and there's been a lot of aftermath from it. There's been rifts in tribal councils. There's been leaders removed from office. A lot of people I talked about, you know, one tribe said the playground equipment, some parents wouldn't let their children play on it. So wow. I just feel like this part of the story is so important because they've clung all along to this mascot, and his Dan Snyder's defense has been, well, we help these communities. And if you talk to the communities, you realize like it's not that simple.
God, it's like, you know, we were talking about this a little bit on Monday, where it's like you try to find the upside to it. And I guess the upside is that, you know, like we said, there's not going to be an offensive image. There's not going to be offensive language in the team's new branding launch. And so you have to consider that a win. But then everybody else just keeps getting to operate the way that they've been operating the whole time, you know. And it's just, it's gross. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's good that, you know, there are people like you and Mike out there spotlighting this. I would encourage anybody to read the story. It's going to be our daily cover today when the pod drops. And you know, try to get a broader picture of everything, right? You know, there's always more to the story. So that's why I'm always happy that we do this podcast with Jenny, because Jenny tells us when there's important things that we need to know. So,
I mean, 90% of the podcast is talking about things that Connor has written. So you're really underselling yourself here. So
that's not true. But the things that Connor writes aren't important. I'm just, I'm kind of the...
You're really underselling, know. Connor. Really underselling. Let's move on to the next news topic. I got this one.
All right, let's do it.
Another piece of news coming out of the Patrick Mahomes deal. Andy Reid is sticking around for a while. Mahomes said that before signing the 10-year pact, he made sure Reid would be around. Reid himself confirmed as much, feeling froggy about the prospect of coaching into his 70s. Are you happy for more Big Red, and do you feel there's a chance the pair ends up as one of the best quarterback head coaching tandems in NFL history? I mean, how can you not think that, right, Connor? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's just so much potential. Like, I just am so excited to see the next few years. Mitch Goldich, who is on our Friday podcast, had a little poll. How many more championships do you think they will win? And I just realized I said there's so much potential, which is a really dumb thing to say about Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And I'm just like excited about, like, this is like just a really good thing in sports, like their partnership, you know, it's just like, it's a nice, like, it's just really good.
Yeah. I'm wondering, so let's say they won two more Super Bowls together in 10 years. Okay. Yeah. Two more Super Bowls in 10 years. Where do they rank in your mind among the best quarterback head coaching duos in history? Because I would argue that, you know, let's say if Reid was 35, you know, how does that affect the calculus and all these other different things? I think some coaches probably had better situations. They were in there sooner, whatever, however it worked out. I would probably, you know, if they won two or three more Super Bowls, I would put them right behind Belichick and Brady and Walsh and Montana. I think that that's probably a legitimate spot for them, right?
I agree, Connor, because it would define an era. I mean, mm-hmm. first of all, the number of championships alone would be significant. But the idea that this would define this era in NFL history and the way that they've reshaped offenses and this unique talent that will be, future passers will be compared to often erroneously in years to come. And so, you know, and also just kind of the Reid legacy of, you know, never quite getting over that hump until he finally found this magical quarterback and being the right person to draft him and develop him when other teams missed on him. So yeah, how about you?
Yeah, no, I think that sounds right. But you know what's weird is to me, as I was thinking about this earlier today, is that, you know, we're definitely in for like a wave of comparisons, right, of the sort of the super talented but raw and unknown quarterback prospect every year is going to be the Patrick Mahomes type, right? And they're going to be like, yeah, he's got a little Patrick Mahomes in him. Before that, every quarterback coming out was like Brett Favre. And then before that, yeah, but it was weird. Like, you know, you never saw like too many like John L. way or Peyton Manning comparisons, which was just strange to me. You know, like those two guys in particular, I guess it was such like a rarefied air that comparison was reserved for. But I wonder if eventually Mahomes will get there where it will become so sacrilegious and wrong to compare someone to Mahomes, a prospect coming out. But then it was so easily thrown around with Favre, and I don't know. It's just a weird. We work in a weird business, but it's such a weird and strange thing. And my hope is that Mahomes wins so many more Super Bowls that we can just stop comparing quarterbacks to quarterbacks and realize that every once in a while, you just get someone really special.
Per Mitch Goldich's poll, 50% of respondents said that they would win two or three more Super Bowls together. I picked two or three as well.
You know what I voted for?
Four plus. Zero. Okay, I was wondering, I was going to ask who the zero people were. 14% said zero, 27% said one, and 9% said four plus in this highly scientific poll. Although I will say, Mitch drew 1,918 votes. Pretty yeah. good response rate here for a tweet that only had three retweets and comments and three likes.
Mitch has been getting a lot of social media pop recently since I declared him the one Twitter account that I would want bound in hard copy and reserved for the aliens that end up taking over the planet. Because Mitch is in the paint. He's got a tweet about everything. If you look back at the last 10 years of American history, Mitch has weighed in on it. Mitch, and you know, there'd be a heavy dose of Philly sports in there, obviously, but I think that would be a fun little curveball for the aliens as well to try to figure out and decipher.
Now, we got to dissect, before we move on to the next subject, why you said zero.
I'm just wondering if, you know, I don't know, maybe complacency sets in, maybe defenses figure out how to respond. I mean, remember, it's not just Patrick Mahomes. It's this generationally talented set of skill position players that they have, for better or for worse. And, you know, I think a lot of things are working for them right now. What happens when that era changes, when that roster turns over? I don't know. I'm just, I'm interested. You know, things never, we were talking about this, I don't know, a couple months ago. If you went back to 2012 or 2011, maybe it was 2011, and you would have told me that the 49ers would have won zero Super Bowls out of that Jim Harbaugh, Trent Baalke era, I would have told you you were insane. That roster was three deep, the most talented roster in the NFL. I think their backup teams could have beaten other teams, but you know, things happen, you know. I think that, and that goes back to our point that we made about the 10-year pact that they made. We don't know what's going to happen. I mean, a million bajillion things could happen to this team between now and then. So why not cozy up to zero and then make yourself sound smart when it happens 10 years from now, you know?
Well, zero is on brand for the pessimism on this pod. And I will say that voting for two or three was more of like a hopeful vote, because I think it would be fun to watch. You know, I always say, like, I've enjoyed covering the Belichick-Brady years because that's just like such a piece of history. And so I think it would be fun to be able to, we weren't covering the league when the Patriots dynasty started. I mean, we certainly got to cover an interesting chapter of it and the ultimate end to the Brady-Belichick time together. But this one we got to see from the beginning, and so I think I would like to see it be two or three. I think this is a rare moment of optimism for me, Connor. Maybe I'm,
this is, you know, very, very exciting.
Maybe I'm growing.
I think that Ernie agrees, my little terrier who has been barking throughout the duration of the episode. So everybody say hi to Ernie. Ernie, say what's up to everybody. Okay, so we'll move on to the next topic here. The Chiefs and the Ravens seem to be among the first teams coming to grips with the fact that fans will not be a part of the experience. The Chiefs told season ticket holders that for at least the next few, the first few games, there'd be reduced capacity. They did not define that, nor the timeline. The Ravens, meanwhile, are looking at a plan with roughly 14,000 fans in their stadium. Is this the first in a wave of these announcements that are going to be coming out? I'm guessing yes, right?
Yeah. You know, it actually occurred to me the other day that we hadn't heard yet what the plans were. And the reason it occurred to me was I went to a dentist appointment, actually, which I was somewhat nervous about, but it was on the calendar. And I figured, well, I might as well go. Things are pretty under control in New York. And my dentist, Connor, detailed all of the procedures that she had instituted in her office. They had extra suction devices to limit splatter of spit during the procedure. They Wow. didn't do the air polishing to get the stains off, because that would cause extra splatter. They had something in the HVAC units, like UV light and something, some other kind of disinfecting procedure. So really it had it down pat. There was a peroxide solution that you gargled with for 15 seconds at the beginning. So yeah, anyways, she had it down. She was saying that her daughter, you know, goes to a big football school, and they were talking, she was talking about the plans for the fall, and they say students will be on campus. And she said, they say there'll be football games, but there won't be, I assume there won't be fans there. And I thought, we haven't heard about any of these announcements. And then lo and behold, there's this development today. But yeah, it's about that time, right? Because we're not that far away from the season starting. And we've said all along that the NFL had this benefit of like, oh, it's the off season and we'll address it later. But like now we're at the point where you can't address it later.
Yeah, it's like, what's going on? When is training camp getting started? Is everything going to happen on time? Are you going to put fans in the stands? You know, Stefan Diggs today said that he's not comfortable going back to work yet. I think that that falls in line with a lot of the high-profile baseball players who just said, you know what, this is not the year. I'm going to take it off. And, you know, baseball players kind of have that luxury. Their careers technically kind of last a little bit longer. You know, there's that less of that, you know, play in and play out physicality that they have to worry about, kind of their bodies breaking down as much. But yeah, I mean, I just, you know, it feels like we're just going to get a whole wash of bad news at once, you know, when it comes to football. And like, it was just, you know, we talked about this a million times, and so there's no real reason to bear repeating again. But, you know, it would have been interesting to see a progressive approach from minute one instead of let's wait until the last minute and just slam a bunch of this stuff together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot yet to be worked out. And I think there's, yeah, I can understand why there's a lot of apprehension from anyone who has any kind of relationship to the game.
Yeah. Okay, so as promised, let's get into how the Mahomes deal affects the next one, which is the Dak Prescott deal. The Cowboys, you know, talking about deadlines and stuff that we haven't heard about, they have like a week left to sign Dak Prescott to a long-term deal, or else they're in Kirk Cousins territory. I'm shocked that this hasn't gotten done. I'm shocked that it didn't get done before the Patrick Mahomes deal. I'm shocked that Jerry Jones didn't use the downtime to make this into a spectacle about how Dak Prescott was the quarterback of the future and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm looking at a scenario where, you know, God, the Patriots just use Cam Newton for 2 years and then pluck Dak Prescott when he's done being franchise tagged by the Cowboys. I mean, why this deal was not done before Patrick Mahomes' deal is just an utter and complete mystery to me.
Yeah, I think you hit on exactly the surprise that we felt. I don't think we expected Mahomes to be the first deal done this summer. And maybe it makes sense, but you would think that there would be a race to get it done by the other teams before the Mahomes deal came in.
Yeah. I mean, any deal that's supposed to like earth-shatteringly throttle the market is going to freak you out. Just like, you know, the Cleveland Browns jumped on Austin Hooper and, you know, wanted to get, you know, a lot of teams are, should be interested in getting tight end deals done before the George Kittle contract is signed. Because, you know, one of the predictions that I made about the upcoming season was that I think tight ends are going to eventually kind of bridge the gap between the tight end and the wide receiver, which the average per year gap right now in highest salaries is like $9 million a year. There's a $9 million difference between the highest paid tight end in the league and the highest paid wide receiver. I think that's going to change as the more that we understand about their positional value, what these guys are doing now and contributing to the receiving game. So it's one of those things where you always, always, always want to get these deals done before the next one. Cleveland talking to Myles Garrett before the Joey Bosa deal got done. You know, like all these things make perfect sense, but you wonder why teams just didn't jump on it, unless Dak is really that serious about resetting the market again after the Patrick Mahomes deal.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if he's on the Kirk Cousins plan.
It's not a bad place to be.
It's not a bad place to be. If you're with a team that isn't going to commit long term, then you maximize your value. I mean, there's pros and cons to any situation, but you have to wonder if that's the direction this is headed.
It's the Kirk Cousins / Connor Orr / Jenny Vrentis plan. We're
that's
always
right.
maximizing value.
That's right.
People have said that about us for a long time. All right, what do we have for our last topic here of the day?
All right, pretty serious one. DeSean Jackson has vowed to educate himself and work directly with the Jewish community after an Instagram post he made earlier this week suggesting that, quote, Jews will blackmail America, they will extort America, their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they were. That is a difficult quote to read, Connor. The controversy has also embroiled fellow receiver Marquise Goodwin, who said he was under fire from the Jewish community for wondering why people don't get this worked up over Black Lives Matter content. What happens next in Philly, and is there a way to move forward?
This was a weird situation. I mean, this came out of nowhere. I think it speaks to a level of, you know, we've seen this before with, you know, you see it with your friends, you see it with your family. I mean, this era of all this information being available online, and you can just fall down this like rabbit hole and in a day believe something that is just, you know, dangerous and untrue, you know, and some people, I guess, feel the need to react to that in a way and post that stuff online. But, you know, learning and information is always good, but who knows? I mean, you know, there have been some rabbis, I think, that have already reached out to the Eagles and said, hey, we're willing to work with DeSean and kind of show him what's going on there. But it's just, it continues just an extraordinarily uneasy offseason, certainly off the field. But if this these kind of sentiments start leaking into locker rooms, and they already are in locker rooms, let's be real. I mean, everybody, the feelings of people are across the spectrum here. But this kind of stuff, I don't think, sets up for a healthy season, you know, and I think if this stuff starts kind of leaking into the consciousness of the league as well, I mean, that's they're gonna have a lot of issues they need to deal with.
Yeah. And my thought sometimes too, when we talk about what's the path moving forward, I always think in situations where there is some kind of transgression that it's hard to know right away if there should be a path forward. Like, what has the person done to correct whatever those behaviors have been? What have they done to like learn and educate? And if you automatically say we're moving forward with this person, then I don't think there is any incentive, unfortunately, to use that word. I mean, I don't want to use the word incentive, like you have to have something dangled in front of you to do the work, but that's the reality in a lot of situations. And so I think it's always best to say, like, let's reassess. Like, are you willing to grow and improve? And certainly there were just the way that it was handled, you and his immediate reaction to some of the pushback was also troubling. It wasn't just the post, Connor. It was kind of the way that it was sort of the, well, I'm sorry if someone's offended by it, without actually understanding the root cause of those feelings and why it was wrong.
You know, it does bring to light, though, a little bit of just, you know, how much stuff is out there. And, I'm not perfect. I don't think anybody is going to say that they're perfect. But, you know, you're always trying to learn and try to keep an open mind. But just the depth of just niche information out there that's not even information, you know, that's just stuff that's out there that people just consume and fall into. It's been extraordinary during these times. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, it feels like everybody is just falling into these, you know, I don't want to call them comfort zones, but just like areas where they seem to find this belief or whatever it is. And man, like, you know, it's a wild thing that's happening right now. And I'm, you know, you're surprised, you know, it affects all walks of life and every day, you know, 100 million different kinds of people.
Right. And that's absolutely true. Excuse me, Connor, because social media has just been this equalizer for any information, whether it's good or accurate or appropriate or offensive. Everything is kind of has the ability to take on equal weight. And so I think that creates a lot of issues in our society about mistruths being spread, about hurtful words, hurtful actions, hurtful behaviors, hurtful mindsets. And so it's really, we're in an interesting place right now. And I feel like there's a lot of work to do to correct, not just individuals who do engage in hurtful behavior or language or actions, but also kind of correcting the sources that feed those.
I just miss when social media was for, ranking my favorite seasons of The Bachelor, or, you know, even more simply, like, you know, remember when AIM just started to become a thing, or AOL, and you could just go into these giant themed chat rooms for, like, I don't know, Dave Matthews Band enthusiasts, and you could just make up a weird backstory. And, you know, I used to go into band chat rooms and say that I was the lead singer of the band incognito.
Wow.
And like, they were like, but you have like a Notre Dame football screen name. Like, why are you're saying you're whatever, the lead singer of Kiss? And you're like, yeah, you know, because I want to just sneak in and see how my fans are doing. And so, like, you know, that to me was what social media was for. Not all this. This is just, it's getting crazy, Jenny.
Connor, we've been friends for a decade, and sometimes I think I learn the most about you while recording the Weekside podcast. All of these revelations, I had no idea.
I just like to save them sometimes. You know, there's just, you know, you don't want to flip over all your cards. You know, we've been friends for 10 years, but, you know, I think you got to keep, you got to keep popping up a surprise every now and then, you know?
Well, I enjoy it. It keeps things interesting, Connor. Speaking of keeping things interesting, let's move on to the Oracle.
Okay, let's do it. My Oracle prediction is Patrick Mahomes themed, and my guess is that it will be, 4 years into the 10-year contract before we hear about either a reconstruction of the contract, a renegotiation of the contract, some sort of a breach of contract. I don't know, but you know, but any of that kind of stuff. That is my guess. We're going to get 4 years of non-Patrick Mahomes related contract discussion. That's what this news nugget brought us, about a little less than half decade.
I like that. It also gives you a long lead time to see if Oracle is accurate or not.
Knock on wood that the weak side pod is still going for years from now. You know?
Now that would be a blessing, Connor.
Everybody reach out and just let's make this happen. Okay. Let me run this podcast long enough to see how wrong I am 4 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about our Vrentis consensus for today?
I think my Vrentis consensus is just the desire to have better people owning sports teams. And I think that comes in all forms of leadership. I think we would like to see a shakeup in the power structure that doesn't encourage some of these entrenched bad behaviors from people that have long held powerful stances. But I think, you know, between Snyder's handling of the Original Americans Foundation and, you know, reporting earlier this year on the Saints and Gail Benson's involvement with the Catholic Church clergy abuse crisis, it's just a strange landscape, right? Because sports influence so much of the direction of our society. And then you hear about the way that some of these operations are being conducted, and it just makes you, I guess, a little bit frustrated, you know? It makes you frustrated that there aren't different people in place. There aren't more diverse people in place. And that's diversity of everything, you know, race, gender, opinions, like viewpoints, you know, economic diversity. You know, it's just, and I know that, you know, I know that's a pipe dream, Connor, but that was just on my mind today.
I think that's, you know, it's timely as always. And I would encourage anybody, again, reminder to check out Jenny and Mike Rosenberg's story on SI. It should be online as soon as you finish this podcast. It's online right now. And questions, comments, concerns, we're going to do a mailbag issue probably next week or the week after that. So weaksidepod@gmail.com. Don't forget, we're always reading, checking up, reading our DMs too. Hey, guy who called me a jerk about writing about Patrick Mahomes, his contract, I responded to you, but you didn't respond back to me. But we always get back to you. We're always communicating with our fans here on the Weekside Podcast.
Well, we got a nice DM from a listener of the Weekside Podcast that I meant to share with you, Connor. So there's some good DMs out there, too. So we appreciate that. And thanks to you and our producer, Shelby, because I totally ghosted you in the middle of the day today. We were trying to rush to get the story up, and we were supposed to record the podcast. And I said, and I didn't get back to you guys for like 4 hours. So we're recording this in the evening, and you both are very generous with your time and your dinner hours to... So I just want to give you guys a shout out too.
Nothing special about the Pioneer Woman oven baked raviolis I made today.
Oh my gosh, that sounds delicious, Connor. I'll let you get back to that.
Sounds good.
The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.